Everyone, welcome to our meeting. Please join us for the Pledge of Allegiance and a prayer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mike, if you'll lead us in prayer.
Our God, we thank you for this day and the gift of life, and we ask that you bless us as we do the people's work. We also ask your blessings upon the two police officers in Westchester and their families who were wounded in the line of duty. We ask that you watch over all of our safety forces, keep them safe. Dear God, we thank you for the blessing of freedom and so many other things that you give us. We ask that you help us to always be mindful of your presence in our life and to reflect that presence in everything we do and say. In your Son's name we pray. Amen.
Again, good morning. Start with public hearing number 2, erosion and sediment control regulations and enforcement.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Back again. Had a little break there, but hope everybody's doing well. It's supposed to be up to 66 today, so feels like spring. 73 tomorrow. Feeling good. I'm ready for it. I know that. But second public hearing, and this is myself as Kevin Fall, the district administrator for the Butler Soil and Water Conservation District, up here on behalf of our Board of Supervisors, 5 publicly elected through a special election process, Board of Supervisors of Butler County residents. And the district was set in 1942 basically as a organization that was put there for local residents to set priorities on natural resource issues. And back then that was created out of the Dust Bowl, and it has grown into what it is today. A lot of those importances to the district are partnerships. We build everything on partnerships. Our first and foremost partnership is with the county commissioners. There's a soil and water in each county, and it all starts with the county commissioners. And it also has a very important partnership with the state legislature as well for the other major partner. Others included in that are NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and multiple others to basically bring in all the resources, financial, grants, everything else we can into Butler County to help along natural resource concerns. We're here today for 2 years ago in 2004, our board once again set a priority for our urban program and erosion and sediment controls, that we have a process in place to do erosion and sediment controls on pre-recorded subdivisions, but saw there was a need from residential complaints and everything else to expand that process to try to have erosion and sediment controls in place for all development. Along with that came House Bill 411 and enabling legislation to basically help along and set that as a priority for the state of Ohio. And so what we're here today is there's 3 different resolutions basically that we're having public hearings on. The first one is the enabling legislation of enabling House Bill 411, which can only be passed with the county commission approval. And that will take it down from 5 acres of disturbance to 1 acre of disturbance or more that these regulations and standards will apply to. Also, as a partnership function, again, is that it's a partnership between the Soil and Water and our board and the County Commission Board to carry out and be that authority for the Butler County Commissioners. The regs also, the Soil and Water Management Standards, they were very outdated and antiquated. They went basically, this is the first update in 10 years. And they're going from 6 pages to 21 pages. And a lot of that is just detail. A lot more technology has come up, a lot more practices to get the same standards and accomplishments met. So a lot of that is within the detail. This also is a federally mandated program. And these regulations and enforcement and a process as a whole will help Butler County Commissioners stay in compliance with their Phase 2 permit. Out of the 6 minimum control measures, this is just one piece of that pie. That whole permit is erosion and sediment control. We also, with our partnerships, can successfully do and run this program at a reduced rate for Butler County. It all starts with that funding from the commissioners and general appropriations, but then also we get state matched from the state legislature, which is all the boards in Ohio make up the Soil and Water Conservation Commission, and they have worked out with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and the state legislature funding from the state to come to each county. And so we can almost, in the past, it keeps reducing, and we're working at the state to get that back up to a true 1-to-1. But right now, it's still at around 80 to 90% match for every dollar. So that allows us to do things, in a sense, and very close to half cost for Butler County and all the programs we run. The fee schedule that was proposed is also very, is benefited from that, because the fees only that we proposed would come to the commissioners and only help run that program. But with that state match, it is, helps keep those fees down, which are very important, but still enables us to carry out the program with enough manpower and all the resources we need to carry it out effectively to help the quality of life, water quality, and once again, stay in compliance with the permit. On the enforcement issue, I went through and from the question before and reviewed that legislation, and basically it would be the first notice of violation would be 30 days, and that would be issued from the Board of Supervisors, and then if it is in violation after that 30 days, it is a second violation letter, and they have 15 days to respond. At that time is then when we would go to the prosecuting attorney's office to get an injunction for a stop work order. And then once that goes through the process, like I said, it would be a minimum of $100 to a maximum of $500 per day. The issue that was with some of the residents that were here last time was that 45 days seems to be like a very long time to take care of some of those issues, which is then how we expressed our working relationship also with the Building and Zoning Department and that close working relationship that the staff has to be able to call Bill or some of them to get those things done a lot quicker. So Bill was gracious enough to come along if there was any questions that you had on how we work that process out. But I can answer any questions at this time if there be any, and I thank you very much for all your time.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone here who would like to speak in favor of this and during this public hearing, these regulations? Mike?
I have a question. You said the state match. Is there a cap on that match?
It's coming up to that. Basically, the Soil and Water Commission is trying to figure that out because districts have been so ingenuitive with their working relationships in the county to carry out those programs. They're talking about capping it at $500,000. So basically, it wouldn't be a total cap. It would just be if the county commissioners would appropriate any more over $500,000, it would be at a reduced rate. And that's on some kind of sliding scale. There is only one or two basically close to that in all 88 counties in Ohio. But as I see it, I'm looking. Oh, well, no. What it comes into is that if there's programs that need to be done and they can fall along with our board's mission and goals and also meet the mission and goals of the commission, then that's just more money brought into the county to help meet those that the county doesn't, in a sense, have to pick up. So, yeah, if there's, you know, we're always looking at that, and we'll, in a sense, try to get to that just so we can have those resources brought in, because basically we want everything in Butler, in a sense. There's a greater cause for all of Ohio Soil and Waters to have one, but that is what they're talking about. I don't know if that's exact set in place yet, but if not this year, it will be next year set in place to a graded scale above $500,000 in county appropriations that they match on.
Oh, may I go back to that? So at a $500,000 match, you're getting basically 9-to-1, right?
Yes.
That would draw $4.5 million down from the state, or the match cap you're talking about would be based upon total spend of $500,000.
Those are only what we would get from county appropriations. So if we got $500,000 from the county in our general fund appropriations, mm-hmm. we would get $4.5 million. From the state legislature in match funds.
And what are you now?
We requested in November $335,000.
$335,000.
And that
cap
was
is presently not in place?
Correct.
What if somebody came up with, I'm just saying, $1 million? Would the state today honor the 90%, or would they?
Yes, and basically how that works is that some of the reason that it's not a one-to-one match is because basically on the biennium budget, the Soil and Waters have done so well on the local level with building these programs that they have requested more than they were prepared to pay out in the biennium budget at the state legislature. So usually the first and even the second year goes down even more. They have a tipping fee at the state on construction and debris, and that's to help bring up that state match. They're looking at other ingenuitive ways at the state to recoup some monies in there to be able to get that match back to one-to-one. I just was up talking Wednesday with a bunch of the state legislatures from our area, and they weren't aware that there's also a lot of these other earmarks that come out of that one-to-one match, whether it be the Great Lakes projects, other earmarks that ODNR handles that also reduce that match. And that was just one of their misunderstandings, that they thought they voted for a one-to-one match. Well, it was, but all these earmarks came out. So
they
we're always...
To one, I think you said 9-to-1.
Well, they call it a one-to-one because if everything was there, all these ear tags, it would be very close to a one-to-one. But since everything works in arrears, it just depends on what the county... And like we were working with Derek, we have to have all our funds into the account by April so we can turn our budget in to the state legislature so they can figure out how much we're going to get back. So they always plan on it being a one-to-one and push for it, but when the budgets come in, it usually gets reduced and they have to spread it out percentage-wise based on the soil and waters. Did that make sense, Mr. Fox?
I'm just trying to, I mean, that's a pretty good match.
Oh, yeah, real good match.
I mean, do they, like, counties that get in first? I mean, if there's only so much appropriated by the legislature.
Currently $11 million.
Okay. So if we come in with $1 million+, do we get everything in the fund?
At this current time, yes. And then basically all the other, our state match, along with all 88, would be reduced to basically handle that. So it's not a set, like the first year it was 87% match, the second year was 83% because the counties came back to the state legislature.
That's what I was getting to. So they adjust the
yes.
chair
based on what comes
fall within request. Their level of appropriation.
Correct. And that's why I was up there Wednesday saying we need an additional $6 million with all the ear tags and all the increased local appropriations to meet that one-to-one.
Anyone else like to address commission during this public hearing? Bill, thank you for being here. You heard a mention about the close relationship between your department and theirs. Do we run into a problem? You know, I kind of agree that the 45 days or 15 days and 40 and then 30 days is a long time for a builder could use play the system. Now, if he knows the system that well, and if Bill, if you say, hey, we're not going to approve a permit, are we liable, is your department liable, because you're basing your denial on the fact that they hadn't complied with their regulations?
In the past, we have had issues when subdivisions were under construction and there was soil erosion, and all it takes is a phone call.
No.
I had one other question, and I'll share this with you. I got a letter or an email from somebody last week that I passed on to Derek that they had a water drainage issue someplace. What is the area in which you have authority to act, to say I'm going to act to remediate?
The countywide? Or
this problem? Is it countywide, or is it just the township areas, or is it?
For these erosion and sediment control regulations, it would be countywide, but municipalities control their own if they have their own phase one or two permit,
okay.
As I understand it.
Okay.
And that is some of the counties in Ohio work out relationships. Our board will work out a relationship with each of those municipalities, and that may be the next step. But as it has turned out in Butler, a lot of the growth and erosion control issues were in a lot of the unincorporated areas. A lot of the cities weren't really annexing or building a whole lot in this county. Whereas Warren County, their soil and water and their board has a lot of relationships with individual townships and individual cities, like the city of Mason, to get an agreement to basically enforce those rules and regulations the same.
How does it interface with Greg's program?
Greg's is a program that, you know, through the assessment, it's to clean up already designated drainage pathways.
It ties in very closely. This is one of those, part of one of those six minimum control measures that they have to have erosion and sediment control standards for water quality in place. So, yeah, this ties in very closely.
You work with the engineer's office on your project?
Yes.
Okay.
Anyone else? Anyone else like to address the commission during this public hearing?
Move to close the public hearing.
A second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
And then I do have two resolutions. First would be a resolution establishing fee schedule for resolution adopting erosion and sediment control regulations for on one or more contiguous acres.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
And then a resolution establishing fee schedule.
So move.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Kevin.
Yep. Kevin, thank you. And Bill, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
All right. Okay, we'll have next on agenda a couple plats.
Nyer Properties. It's in Westchester Township, St. Court. What they're doing is changing the location of the property lines, and the Planning Commission did recommend approval for this.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
The second replat we have today is also in Westchester Township. It is Business Center, Section 1, Lots 2 and 3. They're also just changing the property line a little and adding an ingress and egress easement. Planning Commission did recommend approval for this also.
Move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes. Get into our last agenda item. Have the communications, please.
First would be under approved minutes from the last meeting, approved travel and training, approved 3 CSEA personnel resolutions, approved 2 personnel department resolutions, approved 10 care facility personnel actions under the county engineer. Advertised for bids for pavement widening contract 7-2. Receive and refer bids for concrete structure for Morgenthaler Road Bridge. Cancel sidewalk bonds for reserves of Providence Section 3 and Foxborough 1A. Cancel maintenance bonds for Westover Heights, Hughes Road Section 3, Trails of Four Bridges Phase 2. Issue special hauling permit. Exchange bonds for Kevin Village and Foxborough 1B. Cancel sidewalk performance bond for Lion Hills Reserve Section 1. Under Environmental Services, approve agreements, U.S. Geological Survey for installation, operation, and maintenance of streamage, Environmental Enterprises for Household Hazardous Waste Collection Services, Technological Recycling Group for Computer and Television Recycling Services, approve pay adjustment for Contingency Planner, approve request for assignment of ES contract to Malcolm Perney, release one-year maintenance bond for Liberty Plaza Sanitary Sewer Extension, OPWC request number 6 for 06 water main improvements, authorized payment of leave time for deceased employee, release one-year maintenance bond for Shakers Run Section 1C-1B, Approve sanitary sewer extension to Woodsboro Section 1. Release one-year maintenance bond for Shaker Run Section 1D. Accept retirement resignation, wastewater collection 2. Approve agreement with the City of Hamilton. Approve the president of the board to sign process performance warranty. Extend or execute memorandum of understanding for lease of property located at 1715 Fairgrove Avenue. Under finance, approve transfers and appropriations. Accept contract with SBC Global Services for upgrading the public safety answering point equipment. Approve 207 general fund departmental budget appropriation. Accept new fund for purpose of receiving revenue and disbursement funds. Receive and place on file justice assistance application and amend certificate of estimated resources. Under job and family services, approve child daycare contract with Little Village Discovery Center. Approve payroll for February 17th through March 2nd. Approve contract with Winton Transportation, doing business as Universal Transportation Services. Approve contract with Butler County MRDD. Approve amendment number one with Butler County Educational Service Center, and amendment number three with Community Behavioral Health. Approve two child care contracts, one with KinderCare Learning Center and Little Children's House. Approve agreement with Butler County Auditor to for the purchase of IT services to support JFS computer environment. Approve amendment number one with agreement with Lifespan. Approve contract with Butler County United Way. Under miscellaneous, approve appointments to the Workforce One Investment Board. Appoint Commissioner Jolivet to that board. Appoint members to the Emergency Management County Terrorism Advisory Committee. Bid award to Digital Data Technologies for GIS GPS contract. Reimburse Mary Ann Williams for workforce development meeting. Advertise for bids for workers' compensation contract. Approve three stormwater management systems, 13.7 in acres in Westchester Township, 30.975 acres in Liberty Township, 12.871 in Liberty Township. Reimbursement to Cartwells for EMA terrorist training. Approve animal claim of $1,680. Approve agreement with Southwest Regional Water District. Approve agreement between Butler County CSEA and Butler County Sheriff's Office. Appoint Commissioner Jolivet to the Butler County Revolving Loan Board. Sorry, Greg. Approve supplement to resolution adopting a county lodging tax. Approve addendum to license agreement with Global 360 for sublicensing imaging for windows. Resolution establishing fees. We just did that one. Authorize stormwater management for 44.9346 acres in Ross Township. Appoint Larry Fink to the Butler County Rural Zoning Commission. Approve annexation of 172.512 acres from Oxford Township to the City of Oxford. Approved 07 action plan for Butler County entitlement program. Advertiser bids for countywide office supply. Approved collective bargaining agreements with Butler County Sheriff and Fraternal Order of Police. Also another separate agreement with the Fraternal Order of Police. And also the very last one is to approve auditor's bond that as required to be filed for beginning of new term. It was filed with the treasurer.
Derek, what's the animal claim?
It's a coyote kill.
Okay.
Board a lot of couple animals for some period of time.
Mm-hmm.
What's the agreement between us and Hamilton?
That is for, excuse me just a minute, I gotta find it. I don't have a hand right off the top of my head. Was that under, oh that was under environmental services. Here. That's for the transfer of sale and share off Sharon Park.
Okay.
No alterations. I move to approve.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. President?
Yes.
I have three items here. I'd like to go. If I could, please. First of all, I'd like to call for a stop to the consulting contract for the Children's Services Board. I talked to Derek the end of last week about some possibilities and some ideas, possibly filing an injunction and some other ideas. It was called to my attention that the auditor has the authority to stop this contract, and with the cooperation of the auditor, we hope that it would be stopped. And I'd also personally like to notify the board of our intention to change the governance of Children's Services and start that notification in motion.
and possibly piggyback on Hamilton County's rules for foster parents. I think they're making some changes statewide. It may encompass that anyway, and hopefully they are, but it sounds like they have some very common sense ideas that makes a lot of sense for foster parents, where they have to agree to comply with background checks and so on, that's badly needed, apparently. So those are the three issues that I'd like to put forth.
Chuck, do you want to make a motion on that?
Yes, please. Well, one at a time, or you want to?
I think one at a time.
Okay, on the first, I'd like to make a motion to, with the cooperation of the auditor, to stop the payment on the consulting contract for the Children's Services consulting contract with Ms. Hefner.
Second.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Okay.
Second, I'd like to notify the Children's Services Board of our intentions to change the governance of the Children's Services Board.
Let me read the resolution. Be it resolved by the Butler County Board of Commissioners that pursuant to Section 307.981H of the Ohio Revised Code, notification will be sent to the president of the Butler County Children's Service Board, notifying him and the Children's Service Board that this Board of County Commissioners is considering redesignating the Public Children's Services Agency for Butler County for the administration, fiscal, and performance reasons to be set forth in such attached letter, which I have here.
I'll second. And during discussion, Derek, can you run through the steps again that we have to follow in order to accomplish this?
First step is to pass the resolution. We send them a letter, which starts a 60-day clock on which they can respond if they don't like the reasoning. It doesn't stop the process. We also
have to be a 60-day?
Yes. Okay. We also have to notify and put this notice in the paper for 60 days, and at the end of that 60-day term, the commissioners may vote then to redesignate the Children's Service Board on basically back under Job and Family Services.
And that vote has to be unanimous?
Yes. So. It does not have to be unanimous if the CSB board does not object.
Oh,
if they object, then it has to be unanimous. If the process can be sped up, say they get the notice and they decide, we see which way the commissioner's going, we'll just all resign. The process speeds up.
Okay. And, as I made my comments in a letter to the board, I've wanted to wait until the task force made their report known to us before making any comments, but the board has forced my hand and forced my feelings with their actions this past week. And I liken this to a disaster where you have first phase is rescue. And the second phase is you call off the rescue and recovery. Well, we've gone into the recovery phase, and I think that we have to take some action. And this also is that when we do get the task force, it'll just report. We either augment or put into action their recommendations. And I haven't talked to anyone on the task force. I don't have any idea what they're going to report. If it, during this 60-day period, their report is contrary to what our wishes are today, the beginning of this process, then I'll have no problem with changing my mind with that. But it'll have to take some real convincing right now. And I'm at this point very reluctant. I heard that the board is going to be asking us to put the renewal on the ballot for this November. I'm at a undecided, but leaning towards not agreeing to that until we have this recovery process and put the train back on the right track. And I'd hate to spend that money for campaigning when knowing that we're in such a dire situation and the likelihood of passage was remote. That may change in the next month and a half, 2 months. I don't know when we have to decide that, placing a levy on in November. I think it must be August.
75 days before.
August. So we do have some time to work on this, but I still look forward to the task force's recommendations. Very upset with the board and their actions, and also their actions with not only when you look at the contract with Jan Hefner with the agreement. I mean, they, you know, it's such a contract that calls for, you know, even if there's, you know, even if the board is disbanded, you know, she still gets paid, which is, to me, looking like they knew exactly what was going to happen by their action. I hope that we can stop this execution of this contract. Kay, I'm glad you're here. You moved up front and center. You certainly can. And I hope that we can convince the board. I hope Kay doesn't have to do any work on this. I hope the board comes to the realization that, they've now heard what the commissioners have in mind, and they'll stop doing any type of agreements that will be detrimental to the mission of the Butler County Children's Services, and that is taking care of children. So,
if I may add, of course, the levy is first and foremost. That was one of the most important issues here. That's why I think we need to go ahead and make a move and get things rolling on this matter to get that more or less behind us.
I have a question. Has the contract been signed yet? Do we know?
Well, we know it's been voted on. We don't know if it's been executed. Pardon me? I don't think it's been executed.
The copies we have not been signed, but that I don't know that they've signed there.
We might, with Commissioner Furman's permission in the letter that's sent to them regarding the contract, we might request that the board or its agent not sign the contract. I don't know what that does to the, it seems to me when we approve an action here at the board, that doesn't execute or
until you sign it.
Complete the contract until we go through and actually sign it.
Right.
There'll be no.
But
I have to certify that those funds are there for that, and that it's, you know, proper use of taxpayers' funds too. And I think that's where the real issue comes in, is that, is it proper use of taxpayers' dollars? And that's where I'm going to head with it. I think it purely demonstrates Reverend Sloan's I want to say lack of leadership, but not being able to lead because he has become too close with Jan Hefner to be able to see what needs to be done and properly lead that board. I think there's a lot of good people on that board who have every good intent. But, you know, taxpayers' dollars are really being or attempting to be misspent here. And those funds are really supposed to go to help the children of this county and not to benefit Ms. Hefner. So, and I believe it's due to the closeness of those two relationship over the years. So that will be the venue that we're going to take in the auditor's office. So they might as well know going in that we're not going to be approving it in the auditor's office, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a resolution. Can I call for a vote?
Okay. Yes. We can add what Commissioner Fox stated there.
Yeah, sure. That's on that. That's on your original motion, but this is on the notifying them of a redesignation. Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
And Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
The final piece on the agenda is to continue with Children's Services, and that's with the performance report. Wade?
Hey, Wade. Good to see you.
Was that all three of your items?
Greg Jolivet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Is that resolution? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Great.
Piggyback.
Can you give a copy to the auditor?
Piggyback on the Hamilton County. We don't need a separate one for that.
Oh, no, but actually, if you want to, if you want to.
You know, you might. You okay with that? Yeah.
What's that?
To piggyback on, in other words, get information from Hamilton County and copy basically what they're doing until the state gets something in effect, which I think are going to probably pretty soon. That's similar to this, according to what the Journal said this morning, reading that.
Do you want that in a resolution, Commissioner?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Second.
Oh, yeah.
Commissioner Furman?
Yes.
Commissioner Fox?
Yes.
Commissioner Jolivet?
Yes.
Thank you.
And on that note, Gary, thank you for being here today. Do you have anything that want to add on that with regards to the state moving forward? Okay. Okay. But I mean, if you want to make a comment on that before Wade starts, then you can go right ahead. Yeah.
Sure. Wade, you're going to get bumped for our state senator.
Let me.
I understand.
As Senator Cates goes up there, this is something I think worth noting, at least for the record, that Derek pointed out on the last page of the proposed contract. There is, I mean, an attempt to, I've never heard of a consultant being placed into a civil service or they call it
classified position.
I've never heard of that arrangement. By definition, consultants are consultants, but it appears that there's a deliberate attempt to put her into a classified position, which would make it difficult to give her all the protections of civil service. I've just never heard of a consultant being, which may go to the whole question that you raised about the appropriateness of the funds. Okay, you can't. And I think Commissioner Furman has had some research done on that. And I think that's worth noting, Chuck.
Just that Gary does a little research, and according to this, it appears that it's a severance benefit that they're trying to execute, and the Attorney General's office advises it's not proper use of public funds to do that. So, sorry, Gary, I just wanted to throw that in.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks. Thank you for being here.
Where do you want me to jump in at?
Hey, the water's fine. Come on in. Just, you know.
Without anything to address anything specifically going on in Butler County, I just went to give commissioners an update on what's going on in Columbus. For the last several months, there's been a task force that's been convened by Senator Tom Niehaus and Representative Wagner from Seneca County, I believe is where he's from. And they were the authors behind the last package of foster care and adoption laws that were passed, Senate Bill 238. In light of the Marcus Faisal report that came out from the Jobs and Family Services and some other issues, we've had a number of task force meetings going on. We broke it up into six different task force subcommittees. This past week, there was a report given that we probably are on the verge now of having just one final task force meeting before the legislation will be introduced. And we're still working out the details about what's going to be introduced, a number of bills and so forth. But we're hopeful by the end of this month that we'll have something introduced so we can now start officially taking public testimony on the bills themselves. The task force meetings have been very productive from the standpoint as we've had a lot of discussion and input brought in from all different fields of expertise. So we are going to be coming to a conclusion here pretty soon here as far as getting some bills introduced. And it's my hope that we'll get something passed and sent to the governor before before we break in the end of June. Regardless right now what type of bills are introduced right now, I don't see this thing here being sped through there. We will still want to have a lot more opportunity for thoughtful discussion and input, and certainly welcome your input when we go to public testimony and hearings, or there should be one more task force meeting coming up probably here in the next week or two. If you'd like to participate, then you're certainly welcome to.
Thank you, Gary.
When's it scheduled?
Commissioner Fox, I talked with Senator Niehaus last week. He's not sure of the date. We do have LSC drafting legislation now, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to package this. This will not be just one bill, mega bill. It's going to be several bills, and so we're getting this drafted right now as we speak. I would expect we may meet as a task force maybe as early as the end of next week, but it's not for certain. But even the task force meeting, of course, it just has no authority to do anything, but these meetings have been helpful in producing our legislation draft.
Sorry, Gary. Yeah. I know that, with our task force that's meeting and their product and our public hearings on that, I'm sure that what comes out of that, we'd love to have input into the statewide recommendations for the legislation. So
I appreciate Commissioner Jolovic, because as you know, the task force has been working on legislation that applies to the whole state here, irrespective of anything that may be done at a local level. I'm not aware that any other county has done what's been done here in a way of a task force to evaluate the local board, or even some of the things that have been going on this morning here. So certainly, once the bills are introduced, we'd like to invite you to come up and testify. I'm sure we'll be having companion hearings in both the House and Senate on this issue as well. This is a fairly large issue we're working on right now.
Mr. President, Senator, I've read through at least what all the different committees or whatever that they had in place. I've read through all those recommendations. One of the parts that I'd like to encourage you to try to have some influence on, if you agree to it, is they've left, it appears to me they've left unaddressed the issue of creating a capacity to, on a real-time basis, track the contact with police and foster parents, which was one of the key issues that came out of the Marcus Faisal mm-hmm. thing. It's my understanding, and I've had some conversations with the folks through the AG's office, that the capacity is interestingly is already built to have those types of tracking, and it's done ironically through the tracking of gun licenses.
Yes.
In fact, we have, and rightfully so, that was built into that. So anytime, whether it's a traffic stop or what have you, anytime there's a contact between a police officer and someone who holds one of the gun license or whatever you call that thing, concealed carry permit. So the software, the infrastructure mm-hmm. to accomplish that is in place. And I couldn't figure out from the committee recommendations, perhaps you can shed some light on this, where they were on that. It appeared that they had done what the state had kind of like punted and say, well, we'll address that later. But I'd like to see that addressed. That's a very powerful tool, and it would be really minimal cost. And frankly, from the county's standpoint, I think in the gun license, the concealed carry permit, there's a fee charged of some amount, $25-$30 for each, or 50, maybe, I don't know what it is, but some fee charge to cover the cost of maintaining the system.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that'd be a very reasonable way to go if there's an issue of funding, as there generally always is at the state level, to have the locals, even if they just made it permissive and said, if you guys want to participate in this, you pay the fee per name or whatever that's registered. Every time you register a foster parent into the system, even if it were $50, in the scheme of things, it would be so insignificant when you compare the benefit that you'd be getting. Do you know where that is?
Well, I know the AG's office has been actively participating in this. In fact, they had a representative of the AG's office at our last task force meeting, and this is very much on the plate for discussion. I would think right now it's like most things, the devil's in the details about how you make this happen. It's certainly a desire to do this, and we recognize the benefits of doing real-time investigations, if you want to use that term. We have instructed LSC to go ahead and start getting things drafted, and when we get the draft back, obviously we're going to need to take a look and see where we are on all these issues here, and that's why when we go through the hearing process, you know, if things that have not been adequately addressed or maybe some new things come to light, we still have the book open, so to speak, to get things done. Whatever gets introduced, if it's introduced by the end of this month here, is only just a starting point. And as we go through now a heavier legislative schedule in Columbus in the House and Senate, I'm sure this will be on the committee's agendas for several weeks there until we get something done. But it's our expectation and hope to have something passed and sent to Governor Strickland to sign before we recess into June there.
Mr. President. The other item, Senator, I wanted to focus your attention on is in the same area, background checks. And I don't know who we have to have this discussion with, whether it's the feds or whether it's the state or both, on the question of getting access to the law enforcement database. We can do that here in Butler County, and I've had several discussions with the sheriff. We have police officers or sheriff's deputies on site at the Children's Services mm-hmm. Agency helping in security and so forth. So those officers could be designated leads officers or whatever you call it, in other words, mm-hmm. with authority to access that database. Presently, if I understand it correctly, those law enforcement databases are restricted by their use only for law enforcement
yes.
folks. If there's any way that we could provide access to, even if they have to be certified or whatever the steps would be, to Children's Services social workers that are out on the streets, going into homes, one of the biggest issues, and if you look at most of the child deaths that we've had in the last several years, it occurs not from the birth parent, but rather from somebody else that's been brought into that child's life. It could be a boyfriend, it could be somebody else, a relative or whatever. And when they're out there trying to find, you know, what type of person is around this kid, it would be very useful for them to be able to run these record checks that actually reaches in to say, you know, well, I mean, we've had instances where they eventually determined, usually it's too late, it's after there's been harm, but the assailant had a record of assault and violent crime and was living right there in the home, and the birth mother had no idea that person had that background. Now, given the way some of these folks live in terms of their lifestyle issues, it may or may not have been a factor. You know, they may or may not have been concerned about that, but nonetheless, the more we know about the type of people around those kids, it's better. So if there's any way that the state could authorize certain people within the social service system to have access to those types of databases, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, Commissioner Fox, that gets into, you know, a very fine line about people having access to information. And certainly we want to do what we can to protect children and so forth, but you also, to balance the other side out, you have to concern about having overzealous employees who just start checking people at random using the lead system, and you end up with a situation like you did with the FBI on the Patriot Act there, where, you know, they're just criminally looking at backgrounds of people they had no business looking into. And I think that's what's going to be the challenge, is to find appropriate checks and balances about how you balance the concerns of children versus having overzealous people having access to sensitive information that could use it for personal reasons, among other things.
The good thing about the lead system is every, and I don't know about the Patriot Act thing, mm-hmm. but every interaction or transaction with that system is keyed to an identifying operator. In other words, if I'm just doing that,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to justify that at some point. Because
I would say that would be a minimum safeguard to make sure
they can track me.
Yes.
In other words, Fox, why were you in the system doing all these
right.
checks? You know?
Right.
But that's a relevant issue.
Yes,
you have
is.
To balance it. You have yeah. to balance it.
Well, as we continue to proceed with this, we certainly welcome your continued input, particularly when we get into a testimony. I think it'd be very compelling to have, in particular, like the Marcus Faisal case, folks from Butler and Claremont counties who've been most close to this issue to give other legislators the benefit of understanding the gravity of this issue. So we have had some other incidences in Ohio, but nothing that the graphic nature would happen to Marcus. And so I just want to make sure they get the full impact of what happened in Butler and Claremont counties with that little boy.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Any other questions for?
Thanks, sir.
Good morning, Commissioners, and thank you for allowing me to present a summary of our operations review of the Butler County Children's Services Board. For the record, my name is Wade Steen. I'm a partner in the accounting and consulting firm Bernstein & Company. I do have with me Eric Richter, one of our senior consultants, who is also part of your team in the review. I'd like to begin by describing what we did and did not do and what an operations review is, because it's not an audit. We didn't seek to render an opinion on the financial statements. Our objective was to determine whether or not BCCSB was using its resources effectively and efficiently, if output was being maximized, and if changes in operating processes could reduce costs. Our starting point was the Auditor of State 2000 performance audit that was done in the Butler County Children's Services Board. In that performance audit, the Auditor of State identified six key areas for improvement: personnel, case management, technology, placement, financial management, and interagency relations. In talking with Derek Conklin, another area that the commissioners and the county had a concern about was contract procurement. So that became the seventh area of our focus. I would like to begin with contract procurement. We reviewed in detail 41 contracts. It should be noted that in 2005, the agency spent $10.6 million on contracts. We read and reviewed all available information on every contract. We looked at correspondence files, tracked billings, traced payments made to the contractor, and we looked at individual client files to see if monthly progress reports were submitted as required by the contractor. We also flowcharted the contract process and reviewed that with BCCSB staff. 21 of the contracts were for service providers. That would be foster care placement, medical, or counseling. All 21 were not executed timely. Six of the 21 did not have insurance certifications or insurance that we could determine. Six of the 21 did not have up-to-date licenses. And 19 of the 21 had outdated or no financial or operating data. Some files we looked at had no checklists, which would tell what item should be in the file. Sometimes an item was checked and it wasn't in the file. Many client files did not contain the required monthly status reports, and when they did contain them, they varied in quality, form, and content. Monitoring is almost non-existent. Only two on-site reviews were done of vendors in the last 3 years. Often payments are made late to vendors. In summary, your contract procurement process is not functioning effectively. It's probably not functioning at all. It's broken. When you have that many audit exceptions, your contract procurement process at BCCSB is broken. The next area we looked at was technology. We reviewed the IT strategic plan, the network schematic, and the IT hardware inventory. This is a bright spot at your agency. Overall, the IT function is very, very good. We were especially impressed with the imaging project that's going on, and when fully implemented, it will make the storage and retention of case files much easier. Personnel. This was another bright spot. Your recruitment efforts since 2000 have improved. Your training is excellent. They're doing a much better job now at recruiting new social workers from a variety of locations than was being done when the performance audit was performed in 2000. The training function is outstanding, and we've looked at retention statistics, and your retention is improving in terms of your employees. Case management. We evaluated the overall agency staffing and the table of organization. We looked at caseloads for both intake and the ongoing units. We interviewed staff at all levels. We reviewed individual client files, as I mentioned, when we did the contract procurement work. We found that caseloads in both areas, ongoing and intake, increased from 2003 to 2005. One of the things that we then looked at was staffing overall. Administrative or non-direct staff at the agency account for 28% of the total employee base. In most nonprofit or government-type agencies that provide children's services or child welfare services, 10 to 20% would be the norm. Nonprofits tend to be on the lower end. Governments tend to be on the higher end at about 20%. Again, your agency has 28% of its staff providing non-direct services, not directly impacting children. If you could redirect or shift those employees so that you had 20% of your employees providing non-direct and 80% providing direct, that would be 15 FTEs or full-time equivalents. If you use an average rate of pay of between $60,000 and $70,000, assuming salary, benefits, training, and other costs, that's a cost savings or redirect of more than $1 million that could be put directly into providing services to children or in the terms of a cost savings.
That was just that was 6%? Going from 26 to
28. 28 to 20. It would be an 8% move. And that would put you at the high end. The range that we look for in organizations like this are 10 to 20. So we're not asking them to be exceptional. We're just asking them to be at the high end, which would be 20%. One out of five employees would be not providing services directly to children. Four out of five would. We decided to take a closer look at intake caseloads because that's where staff in our interview suggested that they had the most concern. And they had the largest increase in those caseloads from 2003 to 2005. So we performed a detailed analysis of the caseloads for the last 3 months of 2006 in intake. What we found reported by BCCSB was, on average, 17 cases per worker. You'll note in our report that in December of 2006, we calculated 14 cases per worker, somewhat less. We also realized that you can realign some of your supervisory staff and make that move from 28 to 20%, and you can get that caseload down to 13.2 per caseworker. That's slightly above the PCSAO recommended caseload weight, but it should also be noted that you have more case aides in your organization than most do. We believe with the shifting of supervisory staff and the leveling of caseloads and the involvement of case aides, 13.2 cases per caseworker is a very manageable level, and it's one that can be achieved.
Wait, that was a look at the intake, correct?
Just intake, and we looked
at the ongoing.
Not the ongoing. We looked at the ongoing numbers. They were slightly above average, but in our interviews with staff, that was not the concern. The concern was on the intake end. We also looked at placement. We performed numerous interviews again. We reviewed foster care rates, again, when we did our contract work. We analyzed the placement of children in foster care and how it was done. It should be noted that in 2005, foster care contracts approximated $8 million in the agency. We performed what, in talking with the agency staff, they considered a unique analysis, but I'll explain why. We compared the placement cost per day to the agency's total budget. And that's in detail on page 19, and I know that you've just been given our report, so you haven't had a chance to read it, but page 19 has that chart. The reason we chose this analysis is that placement days is a constant and tangible number. Whatever county you're in, a placement day is a placement day. The budget is a constant number. You know how much you spend in every county. You can debate caseloads. You can debate when a call is a call, and you can weight cases differently. But those two numbers are constants. If you look at that analysis, BCCSB is much higher than any peer county. We've only listed six. We actually looked at more. So when you go to page 19, Stark County is laid out right beside Butler County. We believe that to be the most, what I would call, the most likely comparison. Populations are about the same. They're slightly larger. If you look at 2005, their unduplicated reports is just a little bit below yours. Their budget's about $1 million more, and yet they had 308,000 placement days. You had 134,000 placement days. How do they have placement days almost 2.5 times your placement days, but a budget that's not materially different? And the conclusion that we come to is the bulk of that is related to administrative costs and overhead. One other way that can be used effectively to reduce placement costs is through a relative or a kinship placement, and that's the bottom part. of page 19. You'll see there that Butler County lags many of its peer counties in the number of children that it places in a kinship relationship with a family member, all except for Delaware County. We did an analysis on what kinship could mean, because I do believe that kinship is one of the keys to reducing costs at your agency. Again, I'll go back to placement days in 2005. You had 134,634 days. I'm an accountant, so we love these numbers. I divided that by 12 and then divided that by 30, and you have approximately 374 children on any given month in placement based upon the total placement days, and that is consistent with the numbers we saw. They're anywhere from 360 to 400 in placement at any one time. 6% of your children are in placement. I'm sorry, in a kinship placement relationship. That's 22 children, roughly. If you could just double that, if you could get 12% of your children in a kinship placement, go from 6 to 12, you would see that you're still below Stark at 32, Warren at 19, Franklin's at 25. If you could just get to 12, so you'd have 22 more children in kinship for 365 days, using an average rate of $60 a day, which is more between the level one, level two rate, that totals $491,000. Just moving children from current placement so that you're in a kinship relationship will allow you to save costs or shift costs. There are still some costs involved when you're in a kinship placement.
Kinship means what?
With a relative or family member, which statistics have shown, and I'm going to go on statistics. I can't talk on personal experience. I'm an accountant. That is a better placement for a child, and the staff assert that also. When you can put the child with someone they know and someone they're familiar with, that is a much better placement than someone they don't know or someone they're not familiar with, and it's very cost effective. The agencies that we've listed and one that we interviewed specifically, and I'll quote Franklin County, their former executive director, John Saros. I said, John, help me understand your budget. In Franklin County, which is where I live, your budget, you know, it was out of control and you couldn't get it under control. So what was the key? He said, kinship, Wade. He said, when we got kinship placement under control, and we were able to put more kids in kinship, it improved care and it dramatically reduced cost. They're at 25%. I'm suggesting that this county just try to get to 12. Getting to 12 saves you almost $500,000. If you can have 18% of your children, approximately one in five, in a kinship type placement, you could save approximately $1 million or redirect. When I say save, it's reduction or redirection into some other service area. So kinship is a big key for reducing costs and providing better service to the children. Financial management. We performed an analysis of the operating results and budgets from 2003 to 2007. We also evaluated grant application and management procedures. And it was also suggested that all the employees move toward direct deposit. There were some positive findings in this area. Direct deposit is now required for all employees at BCCSB. Is our understanding that that was done in conjunction with the county auditor's office. Unfortunately, they have not developed internal grant management skills needed to effectively manage grants or increase their efforts to obtain grant funding. We did note numerous late payments to vendors, which was mentioned when we looked at contracting, and that causes some difficulty in the relationship with vendors. Monthly reports comparing budget to actual results are being produced by the finance department and are being provided to supervisory staff. We could not determine whether or not they were being used as a management tool by that supervisory staff, but they are available and they are being produced, so that's a positive. The information is there. Expenditures increased with the levy receipts in 2005, approximately 22%. The budget then increased 13% more in 2006. We tried to tie the spending increases to placement, additional services, or the number of children in your care. We could not tie the 22 and the 33, which is approximately 35 or 36% when you round up, to more children, more services, or more children in your care. The conclusion we came back to again is that there seems to be excessive administrative costs. We've cited the 28%. We looked at it here. And then when you look at the cost per placement day, looking at other counties with those two static numbers, and it's not just one county, you look at all, you start to see a consistent pattern. We believe that the administrative costs are high. Interagency relationships. We noted that BCCSB participates in meetings with other county agencies, but they have no formalized agreements with any other county social service agency, which could result in duplicating efforts between the agencies or missed opportunity to take advantage of a cost sharing. And that was specifically recommended in 2000 to this agency, and unfortunately they had not moved forward with that. In closing, what I've just provided is a very high-level summary of our work. We believe that the report states that there are opportunities for improvement in operational efficiency, improvement in internal controls, improvement in the quality of services provided to the children in this community, and cost savings or cost redirection. If you can focus on kinship placement, moving staff from a non-direct capacity to a direct capacity, and improve the coordination between the agency and other agencies within the county, interagency relationships, as well as the courts, you could reduce costs. To give you an estimate that we've arrived at, if you look at the 2007 budget that was approved for the agency, it's $25.7 million. We believe that there's safely 5% inefficiency in that budget that can be addressed. If you look at the results of our report, that totals $1.28 million, say 1.3. It may be as high as 7.5%. I don't want to give an exaggerated number, but 5 to 7.5% inefficiency is not unreasonable in our estimate after we did the work, which would mean it's probably 1.2, 1.3 to about $2 million that you may be able to achieve in efficiencies if you look at the agency and look at what the staff are doing. And it's primarily resident in the administrative cost area. And that can then be redirected to other services. I'd like to thank the commissioners, the county, for the opportunity to assist you and the families and children of Butler County. We hope you find our report useful. I would be more than happy to answer any questions you have now or after you've had a chance to look at the report. I would be more than happy to meet with you again to go through the results or provide any information that would be helpful as the agency moves forward.
Thank you very much. Chuck?
I don't have any questions. Well, just one, on the kinship placement, what kind of background and so on is required in that situation? Do you know?
I don't know exactly. I do know why it's avoided in some cases. When you have a kinship placement versus an agency, and I'm going to say this and it's going to come out wrong, the worker, the staff worker has to do the work of the agency. When you're going to place a child with a relative family, you need to do the inspection. You need to make sure that everything's proper. And so it's many times easier if you have a heavy caseload or believe they have a heavy caseload to just call one of the agencies you've been working with and place the child there. They're responsible for inspecting the home, doing the follow-up and those kind of things. If your staff workers do that, if they make a kinship placement, they have to do that. But they would have the same amount of follow-up and research that has to be done, only they're doing it instead of an agency. That's where you find your cost savings. And other, Commissioner, if I could add, other counties that have done this have actually carved out some staff members that handle that kinship piece so that when you're making kinship placements, they're recruiting families, they're doing the follow-up, and they're doing the monitoring to make sure that the child is safe and the child is cared for. But they're with a relative, so it's a better situation for the child.
Thank you.
Wade, when you were doing your analysis and talking to staff members during the contract part where you mentioned the lack of follow-through and just performance on the contracting, did they realize their shortcomings, or were they defensive or reacting in any way to that?
They realized their shortcomings. In fact, we talked about not having payments authorized, and we sat down, and the person responsible for contracting goes, no, that, and we set the document in front of her, one of my staff members, I wasn't present, and she looked at it, and she goes, oh, and then she reached over with her pencil and signed it, goes, it was approved, at which point he was somewhat shocked, and she goes, no, I was just joking, and then she basically scratched through her name, and so they flipped through the payments that were late or not properly approved, and with a shrug of the shoulders, she just they professed that they were overworked. They professed that they didn't have the time. If I can, I don't want to beat a point that's in the report. The one that was most troubling as an auditor was the lack of oversight. When you do only two on-site reviews of all your providers in 3 years, you're clearly not doing the proper oversight. Most agencies do annual updates at least every other year. You've got to be visiting your providers, and you've got to look at their financial reports. I mentioned the financial reports coming in, and I mentioned in the report they're not looked at. Two of your providers actually had qualified opinions, and the report itself cites lack of controls for the providers, but you place children with those providers, and there's no documentation saying that you made a contact or asked them, what is this problem and how are you going to address it, because we're going to be sending you our children and our money. And we want to get a comfort level that there's a control in place. But back to your original question, it was just kind of a shrug of the shoulders. It really, of all the things that we saw, and I'm come from an accounting auditing background where it's all based on controls and process. That process really needs addressed quickly. You spend more than $10 million a year with vendors, and you need to be sure that they're doing what you want them to do, and it's taken care of properly.
Go ahead, Mike.
I have a question about, I wanted to understand on page 19.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I understand the chart. In fact, I know I don't. On your first chart at the top of the page, you get a total number of placement days.
Mm-hmm.
Then at the bottom of that, there's a summary number, which is $178. Then above that is total expenditures. Is that the agency budget?
The agency total budget, yeah. We just took placement days and divided the agency budget by placement days because placement days are constant. One of the things that we found troubling, Commissioner, I'm glad you went to that, is you notice the unduplicated reports is 2,952. Just 2 years prior, it was 1,800. We cite in our report that we have a hard time confirming that number of unduplicated reports. If you look at Stark County or Warren County or Claremont County, there's some reasonable comparison between the unduplicated reports from year to year. There is no reasonable comparison in yours. That's what I'm saying. When a call comes in, how do you treat it? When you weight cases, if they say we have so many cases, how do they weight them? But the reason we used placement days is a placement day is a placement day. You paid for it, and we know what your total budget is. So your cost, your total budget's approximately the same as Stark's, but you can see Stark had 308,000 placement days. You only had 134. So my question is, how do they pay for so many more placement days and have the same budget you do? The answer is they probably have less administrative costs because they're paying comparable rates. The one thing we did find, and I apologize, I forgot to mention it, when we look at the rate you pay per day, it's consistent with peers. Level one care is 47, 48, up to 55. Level two care is a little bit above 70, 70, 75. Group residential, 80 on up, 85, 90. And that's consistent amongst the counties that we looked at. You weren't overpaying on a daily basis for those days. You were paying a fair rate on those daily, on those days. Did that help in answering?
Yeah.
It was just another way to look at it.
That was just kind of a high level, divide your budget by the number of kids in placement.
Exactly.
That's how you arrived at that.
That's how we arrived at it, and we'll say compared to everybody else. We did go through this chart with the staff of the agency. They were confused and very defensive about this because they thought the analysis was in some way improper. I said if you apply the same analysis to six other counties and you get these consistent results of 80 or 90 up to 120 and you're at 170, and then I do it again, and you're at 160, I said, now you have to help me. I said, once might be a unique or an exception. If it happens twice and it happens consistently, then why is that daily rate so much more than everyone else's in this analysis? And when I suggested administrative costs, they did get defensive. They do not believe that there is excessive administrative costs.
What about the definition of what they call direct and indirect costs? They're directly involved in services, right, and those that are indirectly or administrative.
Non-direct, yeah.
Did you have a definition of that concept that was, did they accept your definition or did they disagree with it?
When they saw the results, they disagreed. What we did is we took the rosters provided by their human resource department. We counted everybody in intake, everybody in ongoing, everybody involved with social services or anything that touches a child, and came up with 137 or 38, 72%. When we shared that with them, they didn't believe that. And so one of the exercises I went through is I turned the table of organization around and said, well, then I tell you what, you tell me who provides direct service to children. And with that, they started circling about everybody on the chart. And I said, well, that can't be possible. It was the director, actually, and she circled herself. And I said, you don't provide direct services.
The director circled herself?
Yeah, I said, you do not provide direct services to children. She goes, but I do. I get involved with cases and hiring employees. And I said, but definitionally you don't have a caseload. You don't counsel. She'll disagree with that finding. She believes that the director and the deputy director and all of those types of people provide direct service.
So they should not be counted on the administrative side.
I count them on the administrative side.
But her her position was it was not correct for you to count them as administrators.
Exactly. Her definition, and I hate to speak for her, you'd want to confirm this, was that it would be more human resource, training, and finance are the only what she calls non-direct. I look at non-direct as those administrative people that don't have a caseload. They're in a supervisory capacity. And if you can bring some of those down and give them some caseload, it pushes your caseload down, makes it easier on the employees, and puts more people in direct service. And we did this comparison to other counties, the ones listed, and you are high, 28%. That's not a gamed up or made up number. That is high, 28% non-direct. Using the same analysis for every county, they all fall at about 20. Maybe low 20s, 19, and you can check with other social service agencies in your county, and I bet if you ask them what percentage of their staff are administrative or non-direct, they'd probably tell you 15 to 20.
It'd be helpful for me, if possible, and we had, or the task force had another consultant, I'm looking at Bruce, John Steinbach, that looked at this caseload issue and came to a different conclusion about the, if I understood it, about the size of the caseloads. And he looked at both intake and ongoing. And Bruce, you're shaking your head. He did not.
I think what John did was report what staff told him, which was if you take the total number of cases and divide it by the total number of social workers, which includes many people who don't carry caseloads,
well, that's right. In other words, we had, according to him, you had case workers carrying 28, 32 cases. And the reason that, again, if I recall his analysis, that was at odds with the agency representation that their caseload was 1 to 15. I'd like to kind of get a sense of what did John Steinbach look at that was different than what he saw. Because one of the things John told me was that the way they got to that 1 to 15 ratio was I may be an administrator, which is consistent with what the director told you, but they give me one case. Well, then, but I hold a social services license. So now when they do the caseload averaging, that one case is put up against somebody that has, 29 cases, so I get an average of 1 to 15.
Correct. That could happen. We didn't drill down to the next level. But we didn't take supervisors into our account. We took social workers, and you may have some carrying a heavier load than others. That is one of the things, and I...
Social workers or caseworkers?
Caseworkers, I'm sorry. Thank you for the correction. That is one of the things that should be pointed out. Our analysis is done on the averages. Do you have enough people to manage your caseload? You do if it's evenly balanced. One of the things who's ever responsible for managing the agency should look at is if you have an average caseload of 15 or 17, you should look at every social worker that is 10% or some percentage above that and some percentage below that. That's a common management practice, whether you're in sales or any kind of production, because if someone's handling 20% more than the average or 20% less, you either have high performers, low performers, but the ones handling more are going to get burned out and not be as effective, and the ones that are handling less might not be efficient or effective and need to be dealt with. I don't know. We never did get to the point with management to say, how do you balance your caseload on a monthly basis, and how do you supervise staff to make sure that everyone's handling an even caseload? All they say is that a younger caseworker handles less cases because they're not as experienced. At some point when they become experienced, how do you balance that? That is something that probably is not raised up clear enough in here, but hopefully as you go forward, whoever's in charge of this agency really needs to make sure that the caseloads are level. You have enough people, you need to balance the workload, or you're going to not provide the most efficient service.
Can Wade, I don't know, can you get, or Bruce, can you, for, I'd like to know, because John was pretty emphatic about how they arrived. In other words, what he was indicating was that the actual ratio of caseworker to cases or whatever was much higher than you've got here.
Okay.
So I'd like to understand.
Communication between John and Wade.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Commissioner, can I work with your administrator, and then I'll get it back to
I'd like to get, you guys together and have that discussion and have somebody come back and explain how you got. No, I appreciate it.
Commissioners, you want me to maybe.